Blog Talk Radio.
We're so glad to be on the program today. As a matter of fact, we have an exciting show coming directly from Philadelphia, Straight Talk at the Democratic Convention. And we're going to be talking with our international correspondent. You've heard of him. You've talked on the program many times before. That's Frank Jackson, the renowned author of Thug Preacher, as well as civil rights activist and leader. And he's there in Philadelphia on ground level, and we're so glad to have him there. And we'll be joined in the program today by also Miss Hermelinda Cortez, and we'll be talking to Frank about the convention and things that are going on. Get off to a wonderful start. As a matter of fact, it's now history. Hillary Clinton is the first woman. Yes, I'll say that again. The first woman after, I believe, 96 years of woman suffrage, where women couldn't vote. And she is now the Democratic nominee for President of the United States of America. And I have to say, I was watching it, and I liked the way they did it. They showed all 44 presidents, beginning with George Washington, all the way up to President Obama, and then it was like a glass broke of all the presidents, and then appeared the gigantic picture of Hillary, which means that the glass ceiling has now broken, where a female, there's nothing wrong with that at all, is now the nominee. So we're going to be talking about that and other things about the convention. And if you haven't been informed, well, we're going to take you to some exciting developments and get on the phone and call your friends, your relatives, and let them know that Straight Talk with Stan Macklin is on the air, coming live from the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia. So, Miss Hermelinda, are you on the line? Are you on the line? And Frank Jackson, our international correspondent, are you on the line?
Any other way?
Hey, Stan, this is Hermelinda. I'm here. Sounds like Frank is too.
Hey, oh, yeah. I tell you, we're living in some exciting times, and we're glad to have each of you on the broadcast today. And we're going to get into it, and, hey, it's open discussion. Nothing is to be held back. And, Frank, I just want to come right out of the box with you. Why in the world are you in Philadelphia?
Well, I'll tell you.
I know. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, man. You go ahead and finish your question.
Well, I want to know why in the world are you in Philadelphia. You come straight from being on the ground in, I think it was Minnesota, where we know what happened there with the killing of, or execution, literally, of, what's his name, Philando,
Philando
me out here.
Castile.
Yes. And also there was a team down in Baton Rouge. And so you were also in Cleveland. So you've kind of been on a whirlwind tour of reporting, and now you're in Philly. So tell us why you're there. Go ahead.
Yeah, We've been really on the go. You're absolutely right. We were in Minnesota. There were so many things happening there, and obviously we were there because of the police shooting of Philando Castile. There mm-hmm. were several protests taking place. I don't want to say riot because I don't think there was any rioting going on. And if there was any rioting going on, it was probably just a drop in the bucket compared to what could have been. But I don't recall seeing any actual rioting, even though the police were there in riot gear and in tactical formation. What we basically mm-hmm. saw were demonstrators. It did get a little bit out of hand there. We were at the governor's mansion. Of course, as you know, I had the opportunity to speak there at the governor's mansion. And protesters left there and went to the interstate. Interstate 95 shut down the interstate, and the police responded accordingly. And you're right, yeah, we were there. Then I ended up later going to the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, and you know, totally different kind of convention than what's going on here in Philadelphia. But yeah, we're at the Cleveland Convention. You know, the Republicans, you know, pretty much had that time looking like it was under martial law. There were police officers there. There appeared to be from about 15 to 20 jurisdictions from different states, mm-hmm. from California, from Texas, from Indiana, from Ohio. And the list just goes on and on and on. The police mm-hmm. presence was through the roof, and they walked around in gangs. You didn't see two or three officers walking around, but they walked around in gangs of 15 or 20 strong. Some of them had assault weapons, automatic weapons. Others walked around with what they would normally carry, but they were just, the presence was so over the top until I think they were able to, just with that presence, keep things at a minimum of about, I'd say three things broke out. One was between two people. One had a sign and another one didn't like his sign and he tore it down and they talked through it. There was another situation where there was a protest, and the police surrounded that area, kept anybody from going outside that area and anyone from going into that area. So they contained that protest and allowed the demonstrators to protest very peacefully. And the only other mm-hmm. thing was the flag, as you probably know about it, and they squashed that right away too. So with that tremendous show of strength, they really kept everything under intense control. So we left the Republican convention and went to Miami, where the shooting took place of the unarmed caregiver mm-hmm. as he lay on the ground with his hands yes. in the air, caring for a patient, at least trying to get a wandering patient to go back to the facility. As you know, he lay there talking with an officer for about 4.5 minutes, explaining to the officer that he was a therapist, that this was his patient. He was trying to give help to his patient. Mm-hmm. And after 4.5 minutes of talk, a horrible shooting officer opened fire on him and wow. shot him in the leg, missed him with the other two shots. Thank God he was a bad shot. And so, you know, we were there dealing with that. We were at the police station. We went to the facility that the young man wandered away from. And we talked with several people there, including officials at the facility. And so we were able to do some things there. I got back home, Stan, and got about 1 day with my family. Got to spend 1 day with my family. Then we were back out on the road again for the Democratic National Convention here in Philadelphia. And as we speak now, I'm actually at the Democratic National Convention. I'm sitting here in one of the meeting halls as we're having this conversation right now. Elaine Rackley and myself have been talking with a lot of people. As you know, Elaine's an incredible reporter. We've been talking with an awful lot of people about the things that are going on here. There was a turn of events at the Republican convention with Ted Cruz, as you know. And, of course, there was a turn of events here, too. And so there's so many people here who are diehard supporters of Bernie Sanders, and they don't want to support Hillary. Fortunately, it's early enough to where these people will probably have their minds changed. And I just want to point out one other thing before I give up the mic. And I apologize that I'm not speaking on a real mic, but because we're here at the convention, I'm using my phone, and I apologize for the poor quality But one of the things that I did want to point out is that we hear all of this talk, and you know, you guys are hearing a lot of talk about all of the Bernie Sanders supporters who won't support Hillary, and it's kind of frightening a little bit to think that if they don't support Hillary, that the Republicans are going to win because the Democratic vote will be split so drastically until it's mm-hmm. just a shoo-in for Trump. But I just want you to know and to put your audience at rest or at peace with that. It's very early, and the group that we're talking about who are saying that they would support Bernie but they won't support Hillary, it isn't nearly as big as the media is trying to paint it to be. We're talking mm-hmm. about a handful of renegades, and of course the negative always takes preeminence over that which is positive. So America is hearing about this and thinking that it's just all of these people that are going to push Donald Trump into office. I don't think that will be the case.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Cortez, any questions that you have for Frank?
No, I don't have any questions. I am glad to hear kind of the threat of travel from city to city as various crises have broken out. I'm connected primarily to, you know, what folks will call often protesters, who I like to call organizers, in many of these cities who have been actively moving
mm-hmm.
Post all of these crises. So it's really good to get, I think, the context of what's been happening all across this country as we're talking about the RNC and the DNC and the election specifically,
mm-hmm.
Because I think too often people are talking about them out of the context of what's been happening across the country. And in my opinion, if neither of the parties are actually actively responding to the political moment in a real way, then that is going to show up at the polls.
Mm-hmm. 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 Now, Frank, you're there with an organization, a newly formed national organization called
ARM. Now, Stan, do you mind if I respond to what Ms. Cortez just said?
You sure may. You sure may.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm seeing here at both conventions, at the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention, is that there's a tremendous difference. At the Republican Convention, it seemed to be more of a Hillary bashing campaign than let's get
okay.
Donald in the White House campaign. What I
mm-hmm.
what was very clear to me was that they spent, well, let's look at some of the real numbers, as real as I guess they can fine tune them. But I believe that they talked on the first night, they mentioned Hillary 79 times, and they mentioned the Republican agenda 35
wow.
times. So it comes down being more of a campaign about why Hillary should not be president than it is about why Donald
mm-hmm.
Trump should be the president. I was hoping when Trump had an opportunity to speak that we were going to see a different Donald Trump. I was hoping that after he saw what the news reports were and what the reviews were and what people were saying about how he was this arrogant bully, I was
mm-hmm.
hoping that he was present himself in a different way, but I guess old habits never change. Old habits just don't change. He is who he is, and he cannot change from that. My concern is a hothead like Donald Trump, as the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the United States of America, will this man rush us to war when we could have talked it out?
Mm. Wow. So he's not exhibiting presidential quality, he is what he is. Yes, your terminology was a hothead.
hot-headed.
That's being graceful.
He's presenting himself he presented himself even at his own convention as very arrogant. And the one thing that we know about Donald Trump, when he makes a mistake, he will not apologize, but he will retaliate at the drop of a hat.
Wow. Wow. Now, you're there in the name of ARMED, which stands for Americans Resisting Minority and Ethnic Discrimination.
Exactly.
Tell us about your presence there under that banner.
Okay, well, one of the things that people should know is that, again, you so eloquently presented the explanation of the acronym ARMED, Americans Resisting Minority and Ethnic Discrimination, and we pretty much like to show or make a presence anywhere in this country where something is going on. We really want people to know that we exist. Now, we're here from just a newsworthy perspective. We're reporting news from here. We're recording and reporting news. But when we've traveled into some of these other hot zones, Stan, you know, for example, areas where police officers are beating and shooting, and in some cases, unfortunately, killing individuals needlessly, we go into these areas, and we're there, to make our presence known, but to take it just a step further. The American public is pretty much aware of the high-profile cases like Philando Castile or like Alton Sterling, who was lying on the ground, a gun pressed against his chest and the trigger pulled, an execution, if you will. And, of course, in all cases, they say they feared for their lives. But we know that the high-profile cases are the ones who make the news. There are other cases that don't make the news. They just aren't big news at all, and these cases get swept under the rug. So we go into these areas, and we dig up these old cases. Of course, we can't go back past the 2 years because it goes past the statute of limitations. We dig up these cases. We make sure that they haven't already gone through both criminal trial against the police officer and also civil trial. To a police officer, if there's any way we can get these cases reopened, we bring suit against the officer, we bring suit against the city, the county, the state, or the entire police department. Whatever we have to do to find justice for these poor, innocent, disenfranchised victims of police brutality. So that's pretty much one of the things that ARMED does. When I spoke at the protest at the governor's mansion in Minnesota, one of the things that people were ecstatic about was when I announced that come Wednesday we would have a team of lawyers flying in and that we would have to turn this down. And the people there just applauded that. They were especially pleased to know that justice was finally coming to Minnesota.
Wow.
And so we take this thing, justice, to other parts of the country. Wherever there's an issue like that, we want people to know that abusers abuse because they can. The abusive husband abuses because he can. The abusive police officer abuses because he can. But once they find out that it isn't that easy anymore, those are the old days. Someone said to me that times have changed and the police are out of control. And I said, well, they've always been out of control. It isn't that times have changed. It's that technology has changed. We saw a woman who was live streaming the killing or the dying of her boyfriend with a four-year-old child in the back seat. So it isn't that times have changed. These things have been going on all the time. Technology has changed. I was just about the first person in the Chicago area to report on Rodney King. And there was a little – just before I actually went on air to talk about Rodney King, who was struck, beaten 56 times, there was just a little tiny, tiny article in a black newspaper, the Chicago Defender in Chicago. But all of the main media didn't talk about it. The networks didn't talk about it. The main newspapers didn't talk about it. So I went on the air, and I didn't go on the air hitting it from the front door. I went on the air to talk about this atrocity took place, and the media totally avoided it. And so, of course, by taking that approach, it just shot across Chicago. The next day, it was all over Chicago. One night after this horrible thing happened, it was the best kept secret in Chicago. The next morning, it was in all of the papers on TV and radio stations. After I had to bring it out.
Right. Now, Frank, you've had the opportunity to look at the Black Lives Matters movement at a national perspective across the country. Tell us about that. Are they go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I want to make sure I'm answering the right question. No. Go ahead.
Well, yes. We look at it at a local level here, but also, of course, Ms. Cortez, you deal with it on a regional and also national as well. But tell us, from being on that ground level, looking at the Black Lives Matters activists that are there, speaking up, standing up, and standing out to make a difference.
Well, one of the things I'm seeing about Black Lives Matter as I travel around is I'm not sure that it is an organization. It started out as a hashtag, and it became just an idea online and something nice to say, and it's swept the country. People think it's a very organized organization, but I'm not so sure that it's even an organization. As I'm traveling, it's very difficult to find out who the leader is. There are some coordinators of various protests around the country, but it seems to be a difficulty in trying to pinpoint who the leader of Black Lives Matter really is, or who the leaders really are. I just think right now it's an incredible idea that has swept the country. The more I talk to people about it, and, you know, we have other people like myself, King Salim Kalfani, who was so gracious as to handle Baton Rouge for us, and he's kind of thinking the same thing. We're not really finding any leaders of the organization. We're just finding coordinators of protests and demonstrations and in some cases, events. And the very fact that these people show up on the scene, all of a sudden a press conference automatically breaks out. Wherever they go, something breaks out. Now, the unfortunate thing about Black Lives Matter is that you do have people who will participate in the protest or at least hang around some of these protests, and people think just because they are of African-American hue that they are part of the concept Black Lives Matter. An example of that was when we were in Minnesota. I happened to, at a point after the explosion went off and there was smoke set off, I ended up putting on a bulletproof vest, as you know, Stan, and the vest that we use, as you know, is not like one that the police department will have. Theirs, you cannot shoot through it, but you can stab through it, or you can't stab through it either. And so I had this on as I was walking around. All of the police were down on the highway except for the few who had the streets blocked off, so there weren't any police officers in the crowd, but there were gangs working the crowd. And so, you know, people would confuse them with Black Lives Matter. If something were to break out, they would blame it on Black Lives Matter rather than the gang. And while I was walking around, I actually was confronted by a gang of hoodlums, of thugs, and they tried to be as intimidating as they could. You could tell who the leader was. He was a little short guy. He was leaning back and talking very no one was talking loud. They were all talking very soft, the only one talked, but very soft and very authoritatively, while the others gave me looks, and if looks could kill, I'd be dead right now. And so what I did, I explained to them why I was in Minnesota, and I went into talking about how I was there to help young men, young women, anyone, particularly the minorities who had been abused and possibly in some cases killed, and find justice for their families. When I got to explaining to them why I was there, and I had lawyers coming in and all of that, some of the ones who were around me started walking away. And one young man in particular walked away, but he came back with a camera, and he wanted me to say this into the camera because there were other people who he wanted to hear what I had to say.
Man, that is amazing. That is amazing. That is amazing.
Can I just type in here for a minute? Yeah, I just want to clarify some things about Black Lives Matter because I think it's really important.
Okay, go ahead.
At this particular given moment, is that Black Lives Matter is actually an organization that is national, and it has chapters. And I think it's important to say this, I think particularly because the three founders of the organization are all Black women, and almost all of them are queer-identified Black women. And I think there's been a lot of erasure of their particular role and the role of women's leadership across the country. So I just want to make that point. And they formed this organization in the summer of 2013 when George Zimmerman was acquitted for the shooting of Trayvon Martin. I do think Frank is right about what we're seeing across the country is a type of dispersed leadership city by city. And in some of these cities, we're finding chapters, and in other cities, people are just responding to the hashtag. But I say all of this because I think part of what the media does, the mainstream media does, and I'm not saying this about Frank in particular, but the mainstream media in general will do this thing where they act like it's just a bunch of black hoodlums in the street, right, who are unorganized, who are violent, et cetera. And I think it's really important to talk about the organized strategies because we are in an organizing political moment, much like the civil rights movement, where there is a disagreement, right, across the movement of folks who are engaged in Black Lives Matter, whether it's an informal network that is a movement, right, or whether it's the formal organization, about the role and the strategy at this time, right? And I'm sure Frank bumps into this on the ground, as have I, in different places across the country, right, where these questions are coming up of the strategy, right? Do we shut down the highway? Do we enter formal conversations with police chiefs and mayors, et cetera, et cetera? But I think that we do a disservice when we don't talk about the organizing methods behind Black Lives Matter and behind the many organizations that are part of the movement for Black
Lives.
That was
very profound.
So I just I wanted to mention that something is happening
to the city, even here on the local level. A couple Saturdays ago in our city, which by no means is a mega metropolitan city, but we carry our own, there was over 250 primarily white young men and women with black-owned and had Black Lives Matters, and they were marching in the streets and going to the power structures and holding up their black fist hands, their hands symbolic. And I was at the tail end of it, and it just amazed me because I've never seen nothing like that. I've seen it in terms of the movement, but these were whites, and there was even some question that they had came out from out of city, other cities, to our city to demonstrate, but they wasn't. They were local individuals who had stood up and said, look, we know something is drastic going on, and enough is enough. But
and Stan, I think that's where Frank gets it right. It is a moment right now. People are responding to the political climate across race in this given moment, whether or not they're affiliated with the official organization or not. And I think that it is the job of not only the formal Black Lives Matter organization, but many organizations who are working towards, you know, safety and dignity of black and Latino and other folks of color in this country to be able to mobilize and move with those people at this time.
And Ms. Cortez, I really appreciate you clearing that up because you're right. There is a misperception of what the reality of Black Lives Matter is. And so you've done a tremendous service by clearing that up for a lot of people.
Well, she's definitely a heavyweight. That's why we're glad to have her also as a behind-the-scenes and on-the-scenes correspondent. And we're just so glad to have you, Frank, being able to give us straight-from-the-heart reporting. And, I can truthfully say I listened to the speeches, and something is happening to the extent that it is a historic change in our country, and if our country can embrace it, I think it can be the continuation of new beginnings. But I think some nastiness is getting ready to surface, and it seems like it's on. And so I hope that Americans can make up their mind that we embrace change or we literally regress, and I'm not for the regression. And watch continuation of a spirit of meanness and hatred to be espoused across the country. Well, any parting things you'd like to say, Frank or Ms. Cortez?
One other thing I'd like to say, Stan, is that there's a lot of history being made here on a number of levels. And the chief and foremost would be as you know, a woman becoming president and Bill Clinton becoming the first, the very first gentleman.
Yeah. First gentleman. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Cortez. Thank you. And we appreciate everybody. And thanks for listening to Straight Talk live from the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia. And remember, whatever you're going through, don't give up. Give in. It's not the outlook, but the uplook. And have a beautiful day. This has been Stan Macklin with Straight Talk.